Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hope, Heal, Recover, a podcast brought to you by IBH Addiction Recovery. I'm your host, Jonathan Wiley. In our first season, Stories of Substance, we explore the field of drug and alcohol addiction treatment from the perspective of the professionals who provide the life-saving programs that make recovery possible. Today, we have Jess Rist with us. Thanks for being here, Jess. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jonathan. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So, if you haven't heard the news, Ms. Rist has been appointed as our next chief executive officer. So, we thought it was appropriate to get her her own podcast to start her career. July 1, she will be taking the seat that I currently have, and I'm looking forward to it for her. And I think she's going to do a fantastic job for IBH. So we wanted our listeners to get to know her better. And Jess, I congratulations first and foremost on your new position. And so this is about you. So I'm going to just ask you a few questions, but I think maybe the best place to start is just kind of tell folks about Jess Rist, not just, Jess Rist the leader, but Jess Rist the person. And get people to get to know you.
All right. Well, thank you, Jonathan, and congratulations on your retirement. Although we are so excited for you, we're really sad for us, and we're going to miss you tremendously. So I guess a little bit about me. My name is Jess, and I live in Kent with my husband and our 2.5/3 cats. Two are actually ours, and one is that we kind of adopted, or more so, he adopted us. He's a neighborhood cat that we take care of. So we love animals. And I serve as the board chair of Happy Trails Farm Animal Sanctuary. So again, extending my love of animals and serve the farm animals down at the sanctuary. So abused and neglected farm animals, and try to find them homes in the community.
So you have to tell folks about the saying that you corrected me on about.
Oh, yes. My love for animals.
Two birds. And yeah.
You know, this is just something that I personally did that's kind of caught on here, is a lot of people say kill two birds with one stone. And so I like to say feed two birds with one scone. I don't know why we're killing birds and beating dead horses and stuff like that. But so I like to correct people and have some animal friendly language. But
it has become the... Everybody understands that that's how you say it.
Yeah, and I don't even have to correct people anymore.
No, they just become part of our culture.
Yeah, they just say it. But no, I'm a huge animal lover, and I'm also an avid reader and writer. I've been working on a book for probably the last 10 years, and maybe one day I'll eventually finish it. But I just have a huge love of reading and writing. I also am super active, so I compete in bodybuilding competitions. I run a lot, ran a couple half marathons. I like to kayak. I like to get outside as much as possible, climb mountains, all sorts of things. So I just like to make the most of life and find beauty in a lot of different things.
Well, we know you're certainly busy, and it's only going to get more busy for you now, I think, in your new role. Tell us a little bit, you know, about Jess Rist, the leader. Where have you come from, and where do you see yourself going?
So growing up, I didn't really consider myself a leader, but I often found myself in different leadership roles. So in school, I was super active as well, involved in a lot of different clubs and sports teams, and just naturally found myself in leadership positions. So I was president of different clubs, captain of different sports teams. And then when I went off to college, got involved in student government, held leadership roles there as well. And so just naturally found myself in these positions. And so when I came to IBH, it wasn't in an immediate leadership position, but then someone who is sitting across from me found that I provided some value and had some leadership traits, and really encouraged me to hone those skills and create the leadership style that I have today.
So, you know, this series that we've been doing is focused on, professionals who provide services. And obviously you're not a direct care provider, And I don't know what your exposure, if you will, to the mental health and addictions field was prior to coming here, but certainly you must have had a perspective about addictions and behavioral health. And I just wonder, like, you've been here, what, 4 years approximately? What has changed the most in terms of your perspective about the field of addiction, about the cause, the mission that we have? What things have you learned, and how has your thinking changed about it?
Sure. So that's a great question. You know, I haven't been involved in the addiction and mental health space prior to coming to IBH, but I've been involved in community organizations for several years and have seen the devastating impact that addiction has had on our communities. And I've just looked at it through a different lens. So when I was at OpenM, we served individuals living in poverty, and we found different ways to help them get out of poverty. And one of the things that we realized is a lot of our clients at OpenM were also struggling with addiction. So while we weren't providing direct support and care for their addiction, we were, you know, helping them along in a lot of different ways. So it's something that I've always been around. I have a lot of loved ones who have overcame their addictions. And then I've also lost loved ones as well. And one of the greatest shifts that I've seen is, you know, there's a reduced stigma about asking for help and about addiction in general. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But even in just the last several years, people are more comfortable talking about what they're struggling with and asking for help. You know, 20 years ago, my uncle was struggling with alcoholism, and it was very hush hush. We couldn't talk about it. I wasn't allowed to see him because I was young, and you know, that was really tough. And he eventually passed due to his alcoholism, and that was really tough. And as a family, we didn't really know how to cope with it or deal with that. Whereas now, you know, we're talking about these things more and connecting people to services, which I think is critical. And I've just had two family members overcome their alcoholism, and they're living a life in recovery. And so I've seen the transformation that's possible when we talk about it. And I think it's critical. And that's something that I really want to focus on, is helping people find their voice and feel comfortable asking for help.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, because a lot of times we talk about addiction and we save lives. But addiction kills in so many more ways than just overdoses. And I know that the overdoses have been the focus. You know, there are multiple studies, and I can't quote off the top of my head, that demonstrate that the life expectancy of somebody who's even in recovery but went through a period of addiction or abuse or troubles with mental health have a shortened lifespan. So, you know, we think of addiction as something that kills you by overdose, but it kills more people. I can't tell you how many people in recovery I've known over the years who have died, for example, with throat cancer, mm-hmm. Just because of the years of you know, alcohol use and abuse, or liver disease. And so there are so many ways that, you know, this disease affects somebody besides just overdosing. And I don't know that we've really focused on that much. We focus more on the overdose piece because it's been, you know, the hot button topic, but, right. It is a disease that shortens someone's life, on top of, the overdoses. So it's interesting you brought that up about your own family. So, you know, you've been the development officer here. You've been the chief operating officer, had a lot of responsibility and have grown into that. So now you're going to be the CEO. You know, what's on the top of your mind about, you know, what do you anticipate the difference being between a senior staff member, as you are now, a COO, but now you're at the top of the ladder, and the buck stops with you. What are your thoughts about that? Are you nervous about it, excited about it, unsure about it, all of the above?
I was going to say all of the above. I'm incredibly excited and, you know, honored to have been selected to be the next CEO. And I'll be honest, I gave this a a really thoughtful review before accepting this position, because it is, you're right, the buck does stop with me, and it's a huge responsibility, and I want to make sure that I'm doing right by our clients. And that's the lens that I view everything through. Every decision that I make, I think about our clients, the people that we serve. And so that's really grounded me and, you know, reminded me that I'm in this place for a reason. And I found IBH, or IBH found me, however you want to think about it, for a reason. And I take that very seriously. So, you know, while I'm so excited, I'm entering into this role understanding the challenges that lie ahead, both at the local level, the federal level. I mean, every day there's a different challenge that we're faced with. And you know, I'm motivated because I think that I can make an impact. I have the energy and excitement to do so, and just really looking forward to everything that we're going to accomplish together. Because while, yes, I am the CEO, I have an incredible team here, both at the senior level, our direct care staff, and our clients. So with all of those people with me standing next to me, we can't lose.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. You know, somebody said to me the other day something about, well, you're getting out at the right time, Wiley. And I'm like, you know, you were CEO during the golden age of being, you know, in the addiction field. And I'm like, I corrected them to say, there's never been a golden age of being in the publicly financed addiction field. And many of the challenges that you and the organization are going to face are the same types of challenges that we've faced over the last 30 years. But hopefully maybe better solutions than we came up with, or more long lasting, but they seem to be cyclical. And so you'll have your challenges, the organization will have its challenges, but a lot of it's repeat of history. I'm confident you guys will get through it and keep providing care.
And I think, you know, going back to that stigma that we were talking about, you know, there are so many people who are trying to dismantle that in the community. And if all of our voices are lifted together, we're a stronger, unified front. And I think, you know, here in Summit County and Akron especially, that's a huge opportunity for us and a strength for us, is we have a great community of support, both at the provider level, our board, and just the community in general, who really supports this work. And so while you're right, it's cyclical, it's a lot of the same challenges, we have a much stronger voice today than I think we have in years past.
So not to make this sound like an interview, because you've already been through that, but just so, you know, folks get to hear from you firsthand. You know, we just finished a new five-year strategic plan. What do you see as some of the growth opportunities for IBH moving forward? I don't have to get into specifics about everything you want to do or want to see the organization do, but what are some of your larger scale thoughts or 30,000 foot thoughts about the future of IBH?
Yeah. So one of the major things that I'm committed to is ensuring that IBH is around to provide residential care for years to come. And residential care is expensive and people don't want to pay for it. And so finding different funding sources to make sure that that program is sustainable, because it's critical that we're able to provide this. We're the largest provider of residential care in the county and really the state, which, you know, and that's important to me that we're able to still provide that level of care. And as we embark on a capital campaign to rebuild two new dorms in our campus, I hope to expand that access to care, because there are more people in our community who need our support, and getting them quickly into treatment is vital. So that's a big project of ours, is getting that campaign completed. But then also focusing on the whole person. And I think we do a really great job here already of that at IBH, but of treating all facets of the person, you know, helping them with their spiritual care, their mental health, their physical health, their emotional health, helping them find housing, helping them find jobs, you know, treating them as a person. And I really hope that we can expand on that and enhance that programming as well.
So, you know, I think it's great that we have found an internal candidate to run the organization, to lead the organization over the next however many years you decide to do this. But with that comes challenges too. And so I'm just going to ask you, and you don't have to have complete thoughts on this, but you're going to be moving from a position with folks where you were one day their colleague and the next day their boss. So talk a little bit about it. Have you thought about that? How are you going to handle that relationship professionally and personally, if applicable? What's your comfort level with that? And what are you thinking?
Sure. So it's definitely a new territory for me. And again, it's something that I very thoughtfully considered before accepting this role, because I love what I do. I couldn't lose in this situation. If I weren't selected, I would stay because I love what I do. But it is going to be a challenge. It is going to be different. But when I really think of what I'm able to do and what I can bring to the table, I knew that this was the right next step for me, because I know that I'm capable of more and I have more to contribute. So it will be a different territory to navigate, but I have such great relations with all of my colleagues and our staff, and just hope that we can continue to have open and transparent conversation. And I already have started having a lot of conversations with my colleagues about this. And, I think we'll learn from each other day by day, step by step. And I think that's how I'm going to approach this.
Okay. Within that, do you see anything in terms of your leadership style that you may have to not necessarily change, but reflect more of one characteristic of your leadership style versus the other?
So one thing that I think I'll have to focus a little bit more on is saying no or delegating, which is really difficult for me because I'm a doer. I just want to get things done. I want to help. And knowing that I won't be able to do it all, I can't do it all. And to rely on the strengths and skills of my colleagues is going to be critical for me and for them too, to know that they have more space to contribute and get involved in maybe projects that they wouldn't have been able to if I'm always saying yes to everything. So that's something that I've already been trying to practice. It definitely takes a lot of practice for me to say no, but I think that's something that I'm going to have to change moving into this new role.
Yeah, that's said very eloquently. What I told Jess was, you got to be a little bit more mean. Jess is known as a very kind person, very patient, which are great characteristics, but some days you got to be a little bit less patient and more mean. But
I've been told my mean face is still nicer than everyone else's, so I'm working on it.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the podcast that was recorded last, which was Mel, recording me as my leaving the organization, my final interview. But one of the things we talked about was, what advice have you given Jess? But one of the things we touched on is, when you're the CEO, there is the buck does stop with you, quite literally. And so there are so many things that we've talked about that you just got to get used to the fact that it comes with the territory. And, certainly one of them is going to be folks are going to be critical of you, because that's what happens to leaders. And so, you've got to be prepared for that. And I think you have the mental fortitude to do that.
No, that's really good feedback. And it's also something that I've considered. And, I probably didn't always handle that well. I didn't always handle criticism, but one thing that I've been trying to focus on over the last several years is to take little bits and pieces of that criticism and find what is the truth and, what is an emotional reaction. And if there's something that I can improve upon, absolutely. I welcome that feedback. I ask for that feedback because I want to grow. I don't know everything. I'm not the best at everything, but I want to grow. And so I can only grow and become a better leader if I'm told what to change or what to work on or what's working well, what's not working well. So it's definitely a learning process to separate what's factual and what's emotion. But I think we can all benefit and we can all grow from having these open dialogues and conversations. So while I'm not necessarily excited for the criticism, I am ready and willing to accept it when it comes.
I think one of the
more important traits of a high level leader is humility. And you don't come across as somebody who has a big ego, which is good. So as you know, as you move forward and the organization has its successes, you know, how are you going to handle, you know, those wins in a way that doesn't come off as, you know, this is about Jess Rist versus it being about the team and about IBH?
Sure. So a lot of people have been, you know, congratulating me on the CEO role, or when I tell someone that I've accepted the CEO role, they're like, "Ooh, big job. That's important." I'm like, "No, I'm just Jess. You know, I'm still just Jess when it comes down to it. And it is to me just a title. Everyone here is a leader, whether you're at the executive leadership side of the house or direct care staff or entry level, whatever, everyone here is a leader because we are impacting the lives of the clients who come to us for their care. So to me, it's not about me. It's about IBH and it's about our clients. And any success that we have, it's not because of me. It's because of this incredible team that we have. And we celebrate together. We're a team. And I believe in that. And that's something that you've instilled here in the culture as well. And that's something that I'm going to carry on with me throughout my journey here.
You know, one of the things that we measure things here, you know, what gets measured gets done. Right. So how are you going to know 2 years from now, 5 years from now, however long you stay here, that you've been successful and the organization, therefore, has been successful? What do you think the biggest signs of that, other than still being in business, which some days is a challenge in and of itself? But what do you see as those key markers that are going to tell you that the place is heading in the right direction and you're making, flipping the right switches, so to speak?
Yeah, there's a lot of metrics that we can look at that will indicate success. But a few that come to mind is, one, are we serving more clients each year? As we continue to expand, are we serving more clients? And then two, their national outcome measures. Are they staying sober? Are they staying out of the criminal justice system? Are they finding housing? Those are all critical things that we need to look at that show, is our programming is it successful? Is it working for our clients? And then on the in-house side is our staff. Are they engaged? Are they satisfied to work at a place like IBH? And we have good retention and good engagement with our team. We've got a great culture here at IBH. And so to be successful, it's about the clients, of course, but then it's also about the people who are doing the work every single day. So do we have that high level of engagement and satisfaction with our team?
So you mentioned client outcomes. And if there's one thing I wish in my tenure we would have had an opportunity to focus more on in terms of longevity, outcomes beyond just a year. That's very expensive work. Someone else is going to have to help us fund that. But, and maybe it's not even IBH who conducts that, but just participates in it. But outcomes that are extended beyond just 6 months, outcomes that are extended beyond just a year, are something that our field isn't really good at. And there's reasons for that. One, it is expensive. And two, our clients are tough to track after they leave our care. Many of them move on. And it's hard to ask somebody, "Hey, are you still sober 3 years after you left IBH?" if you can't find them to ask them that. The other biggest reason I think that, you know, we don't focus on outcomes enough is because we're not paid for them. We're paid for producing units of service, largely. And it's disappointing, quite frankly, that 20 years after everybody agreed that the way to get paid and the way to bring accountability to the field is to pay for outcomes, I don't feel as a system we're any closer to being paid for outcomes today than we were 10 years ago. And you know, that's whether it's Medicaid as the payer and its managed care entities, or whether it's our local resources or state resources. We're still being paid to produce units of care versus successful outcomes. And so I hope that changes under your tenure. I don't know what your thinking on that is, but it's going to take more than just RIST to make that change. It's going to take us, you know, system-wide advocacy. But I hope you see that in your career time where, you know, places like IBH get paid based on the quality of care, because that's what we focus on, you know, with our clients. Unfortunately, there's a misalignment between that and how we're paid for what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, IBH, despite all of that, has still done an incredible job of providing the care that we do, earning us, you know, a number two spot best treatment facility in the state. And so I really intend on carrying that forward of, well, yes, of course, you know, people want to see people coming into treatment, you know, getting in pretty quickly. And unfortunately, they want to see them leave pretty quickly because they want more people to get in. But of how do we balance that? Because it's so important that we provide the care that the clients deserve, the care that they need. And that's always been one of my favorite things about IBH and working here, is because that's more important to us. Our clients receiving the care that they need, that's our number one mission here. That's what we care the most about. And so, yeah, it's going to be a challenge, but I do hope that in my tenure and my time here that I can see a change, that people want to reward the outcomes and not just the access and getting people into treatment as quickly as possible.
Well, I'm hopeful that's where the system will go. And I will check back in with you to see how that's going from time to time. Jess, thanks so much for being here today. Good luck to you and your team moving forward. You know, I will check in with you every once in a while, if you want me to, and just see how things are going. But I look forward to the future of IBH under your leadership. And I just wish you all the best.
Thank you. It really means a lot. And we're going to miss you, and know that we'll be coming to you as well. We're not going to leave you alone for too long.
Yes, Mel's already reminded me that I'll be hosting these podcasts and continue to help out with the capital campaign, which is very important.
We're going to keep you busy in retirement.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you and my wife. So both. So, all right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jonathan.